This is WRFR-LP 93.3 FM Rockland, broadcasting also on W257BI 99.3 FM Camden, and streaming on the web at WRFR.org.
On July 18th, I spoke with attorney Kim Irvin Tucker. She is representing the Maine Lobstering Union and several other organizations battling a proposal by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to dredge nearly a million cubic yards of polluted sediments from shoals in the approaches to Searsport Harbor, then dumping them between Belfast, Islesboro, and Northport. The interview follows a meeting of the Maine Board of Environmental Protection, which heard requests for the board to assume jurisdiction over the review process. The board declined for reasons that don't seem to make a lot of sense. Recording is 25 minutes long. Hello, WRFR. You're on the air.
Hi, Ron. It's Kim Tucker.
Well, glad to hear from you, Kim. We were just listening to Patty Aho give her explanations for why the citizens don't matter. Their concerns didn't rise to the occasion. You were there, too. What the heck went on the 16th?
Well, I think what we saw on the 16th was the realization of one of Governor LePage's primary goals when he came into office in 2009, which was to completely eviscerate the Board of Environmental Protection as a foil against bias and pressure from any administration on a development by some corporate interest. I mean, the whole purpose behind the Board of Environmental Protection has always been to be a check on the commissioner having unbridled discretion over these sorts of issues. Governor LePage had members of the legislature as LV1, his first term in office, go in and gut the ability to get to the BEP, limited by eliminating 4 out of the 8 criteria. And the person who shepherded that and saw that through in the legislature is now the chairman of the BEP. So you saw a chairman who his whole function in life several years ago, back in 2011, was to create obstacles for getting BEP jurisdiction, and now he is the chairman of that board.
Now, chairman without kind of rise ranks, right? This is his first term, and he's chairman? How could he possibly understand what's going on?
Oh, I think he understood it completely. He doesn't understand, perhaps, or doesn't accept, I would say, perhaps the people there don't either accept what the original intent, statutory intent for the board is, but he understood it perfectly well. He just, I think, probably philosophically disagrees with that. But I think the overarching lesson that we saw there was you had, out of the four members that showed up, three of them expressed bemusement over why we were asking the Board of Environmental Protection to assume jurisdiction to run unbiased adjudicatory proceeding when, after Commissioner Aho does an adjudicatory proceeding, we could appeal to them.
This is not an appeal. Didn't they read, like, BEP instructions? Like, is there a BEP for Idiots guide?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think that I certainly think I would feel, after the experience we had the other day, I don't see any point for anyone going to the BEP until it is populated by members that see the value of its existence. And right now we do not have that.
And it's it sounds as though the other things that they do, which is reviewing departmental decisions, that this board is not likely to act too kindly on those, saying the decision is not nature-friendly enough.
Well, I mean, I think this was a prime example of the problem. You have what I consider to be, and I think any attorney general's office in the other 49 states of this great nation would see as a violation of due process and ethics, is having the same assistant attorney general that has advised the commissioner on the jurisdiction sitting next to the chairman advising this committee on jurisdiction while the commissioner sits there. This body was serving as almost an appellate body over the jurisdictional question of whether the board had jurisdiction. The commissioner says, no, you don't. And the assistant AG sitting there is exactly the same assistant AG. That is virtually unheard of in any state I know of. And I have served and continue to serve as an assistant AG. I've served for two states, and I continue to serve as special assistant AG in Mississippi on Deepwater Horizon oil spill. And I have to say that I am unaware in 30 years of working for state attorneys general of any state other than this one that would allow the same assistant AG to advise both the commissioner and the board that sits as the appellate entity on the same issue.
I mean, try to look at that in civil law or criminal law. Can you imagine the AG being the defendant's lawyer, too?
No, it's just the bottom line is it's been challenged before that there's a question of bias when assistant AGs from the same division provide counsel to the Department of Environmental Protection and the board. And the court has said as long as the attorney has a firewall between the assistant AG that advises the board and the assistant AG that advises the department, that there is no due process violation and there is no indicia of bias. Here, in contrast, you have the same assistant AG advising both on the same point of law. No independent assessment by another AG, no independent counsel. And I don't know if the assistant AG here was putting a firewall between the left and right side of her brain. But there were obviously to this in advance of the hearing and were rebuffed by them. So we had what we had. So what we had was a commissioner saying there is no activity taking place in more than one municipality. We provide them with a chart that shows the municipal boundaries that go into the water for all of the communities where the dredging and dumping would take place, a map that is created by the state of Maine that shows that the dredging occurring in Searsport and the dump is occurring in Northport and Islesboro's municipal boundaries. And then we have the assistant AG saying, I just don't know. I just don't know because, you know, technically the state owns the bottom. Ignoring the law,
Maine gives a lot to municipalities, a lot of home rule power to municipalities.
Well, it gives a lot of home rule, and the state of Maine has determined what the municipal boundaries are. And for an assistant attorney general, the boundaries are not what the state says the boundaries are, and that the boundaries the state has said exist have no real meaning in this context. After the Department of Environmental Protection has required the Corps of Engineers to give notice to five towns that could potentially be impacted by this, it just sickened me. As someone who has served for attorneys general for 30 years, it sickened me, and I don't know how else to explain it than that. Well, I'm very disheartened by the failure to have the attorney general of this state follow the rules that every other attorney general files in maintaining the appearance of propriety in these sorts of proceedings. And that was shocking. It was saddening and wrong. But what it does tell us is the bottom line on this project is if the law is applied, the Corps of Engineers should never be given a water quality certification under the Clean Water Act, because you cannot give a permit that allows for the aquatic disposal of dredge spoils when there is a lesser
Reasonable alternative.
Yeah, an environmentally damaging, practicable alternative. It's called LEDPA. You can only give a permit to the alternative that is the least environmentally damaging, practicable alternative under the Clean Water Act in this country. And the state of Maine has an obligation to enforce that. There are two lesser damaging alternatives here. One is to do a maintenance dredge only, and the other is the Dawson alternative, which would allow ships that have a two-foot deeper draft safely use the port of Searsport than the Corps' alternative. This is not an issue, and I want to emphasize this very much. This is not an issue of NIMBYs and environmentalists and lobstermen saying, we don't want the port of Searsport to be developed and improved. That's not the issue here. We support the maintenance dredge, and we support them doing the Dawson alternative where it'll be allowed to bring in larger ships safely. I mean, there is no advantage to anyone for the maintenance dredge not to be expeditiously done safely with the dredge spoils disposed upwind. Our only issue is all dredge spoils should be disposed upwind and not where we get our fish. And the other issue is that we do not object to them bringing these larger ships in. If they think they're going to show up, fine. Do it. We're not objecting to the larger ships coming to Searsport. We simply say there's a cheaper, safer way of accomplishing that, which is to do the Dawson alternative where you just restore the 35-foot channel, the same as Portland, the same as Portsmouth depth, and you deepen the dock area to 45 feet so that the vessel can use that without destroying all the jobs and all of the seafood and safe food source that we have that provides employment to thousands and thousands of Midcoast residents, just so that six vessels or less have to wait 6 hours or less for high tide. I mean, just that it is incomprehensible to me that when number one industry that provides jobs and fuels our economy, fishing, lobster fishing, is being ignored in favor of Sprague and Irving not having to wait 6 hours or less for a high tide.
Let me ask you, you represented Maine Lobstering at this
event. So one of the things that I find vexing about all of this is that it just makes no sense. And I always try to make sense out of something so I can understand how to rationally discuss something with someone. But what became clear at the Board of Environmental Protection proceeding the other day, not Corps, nor DEP, nor DMR, nor the BEP, or DOT, are remotely interested in finding a way to share the bay in a way that doesn't damage anyone and that we all have our cake and eat it too, and maintain the economy we have while growing it. All they are interested in, because they can, is shoving this through, and they are not interested in hearing that there's an alternative way of doing it that creates more jobs, more economic benefit to the state. They only are going to shove it through because they can. And there's nothing I can say or do, and they're going to ignore the law. They're going to ignore process. They're going to ignore procedure. It's just going to keep forcing it through until they start digging.
Let me ask you. Maine has at least three organizations dedicated to nothing but the furtherance of the Maine lobster industry. Maine Lobstermen's Association, Downey's Lobstermen's Association, Maine Lobstering Union, relative newcomer on the block. What's happening with them?
Maine Lobstering Union is completely supportive of the lobstermen in Zone B and C and in defending all of the lobster industry by fighting this dredging option that the Corps is pushing. If it wasn't for the Maine Lobstering Union putting its resources up to get Dr. Yeager to do the assessment to demonstrate that the sediment testing that the Corps had done previously was flawed and inaccurate, they would have probably already been dredging out there. Last year, the Maine Lobster Union, which at that point was less than 2 years old, put significant resources into this, as well as Sierra Club of Maine, together worked to get Dr. Yeager to do the assessment. And Dr. Yeager was chosen because he is a neutral expert that is working for the federal court as the court's appointed sediment expert. We didn't want to go to some hired gun that was going to give us an answer people thought we wanted. We wanted to go to the man who knows more about the sediment in Penobscot Bay than anyone else and has neutrally studied it for the judge.
And that's right, under judicial scrutiny.
Under judicial scrutiny, under judicial supervision, under judicial control for the purpose of not any party. And that's why we went to him. And what happened was DEP told the Corps to do updated testing after they got Dr. Yeager's report. So in the early part of 2015, the Corps did additional testing. They completely ignored the court's experts' requirements for doing that testing and did it in a way that completely violated the Penobscot River Mercury Study standards. They took one-foot giant segments and tested those as a means of diluting the level of contamination that could be found there. They were trying to understate it. Even all of their machinations to understate the level of contamination, the reality was it's so contaminated that now the Corps has had to acknowledge they were wrong in 2009 when they said that all of this sediment is suitable for uncontained open ocean disposal. Now they've had to admit that at least the first foot, perhaps more, of all of that area contains so many contaminants that it is unsuitable for uncontained open ocean disposal. And despite that, they're still suggesting it get dumped in the fertile grounds off of Islesboro in a geologically unstable pockmark that was formed from venting methane. Now what they're proposing to do is first take off the really, really contaminated layer, dump it into the pockmark that they don't know will keep it.
Because, get out of here!
Yeah, dump it in the pockmark, then do a second dredge and dump the less contaminated material on top of that, and then I guess we'll pray that it stays there, ignoring the fact that there are countless studies that have taken place since 2006 that demonstrate that no sediment stays in the pockmarks that's deposited there, even by natural attenuation. Because of the complex currents in that part of the bay, everything that goes into the pockmarks leaves the pockmarks because the scouring. The currents there scour out the pockmarks. That's why when it comes to the fact that 10 years ago, the pockmarks looked the same as they look today, that should be a clue. Because normally what you would expect is if the methane vent creates a big hole from an explosion, then eventually that hole will dip down on the side, fill up with the sediment coming out of the Penobscot River and the
action. Just like a dredged area would.
Sure. But the problem is that's not what happens in these pockmarks. The pockmarks look the same today as they did 10 years ago, and the reason for that is everything that goes into them through natural attenuation is scoured back out by these currents. Now, logically, anything that you dump in there also is going to come out. So you're talking about them acknowledging the fact that this stuff is, forgetting the fact that it may also contain very dangerous mercury deposits that only are safe if they remain buried. They're going to dig that up, put it in that pockmark, then take some extra time to dig up the other stuff. So it's already going to be washing around during the time while they do the second dig. And then they're going to dump that other material in there and hope it stays, and hope it covers all of it, and all those sorts of issues. They're going to hope that all happens in an area that has, in the history of the world, Dr. Kelly, Joe Kelly of the University of Maine, former head geologist of the state of Maine, And in the history of the world, he can find no example of any entity ever giving a permit to use a methane vent pockmark to dispose of dredge spoils, let alone one in an area with such complex currents that there's natural scouring that will take place.
And I am sure that that is still in some ways an active gas area. I doubt it's all pocked out. And that was one of the concerns back in the 90s when we wanted to build a cargo port there was, if you're going to be dumping things into that same area where they plan to dump the spoils, what are you going to trigger? What's going to happen?
Well, that's exactly what the issue is because they thought at the time it was triggered. There have been reports that just the action of somebody dropping their anchor in that area has caused methane to bubble out from the sediment below. So there's no telling what the weight of 110 acres worth of material being stuck into three tiny pockmarks, which, you know, so they're 150, 100 foot deep, but still you're talking about taking an area of 110 acres and sticking it into a much smaller area. And compressing that, and then hoping it all stays, hoping it doesn't trigger an explosion, hoping it doesn't trigger an explosion, a chain reaction of explosion, because there are 2,000 pock marks there in chains, because they think that they won't center in that area, and that any kind of seismic activity can trigger them. So whether it's triggered by a natural occurrence, whether it's a storm, whether it's placing the material and the weight of that causing instability below something, or whether it's scouring, there are any number of ways that this can cause what Dr. Kelly has described as a calamity of turbidity, which will kill in the water column, everything it lands on, it'll smother all the benthic life forms in the area. And for what? So that six vessels a year don't have to wait 6 hours for
like
high
tide. Like you said,
tide.
That doesn't make sense. I mean, if this were some kind of national survival thing, like we had to slip an aircraft carrier and didn't want to wait for the tide or something, okay, ridiculous scenario. But what else? I mean, why else sacrifice all that and risk all that?
Yeah, and why else when you've had 15 years to study what the possible consequences could be, would you do that? Now, what you'll see when you play back the sound from Mark Habel, the Corps acknowledged the other day, the reason they have selected putting this in the pockmarks. The sole reason they chose pockmarks is because it's cheaper than putting it away, and it's cheaper than they do with it, which is to put it on land. All this is about them trying to risk a multi-billion-dollar industry in Penobscot Bay, the Western Penobscot Bay lobster fish alone brought in over $133 million just last year. That's valued at $651 million just in 2014 in value to the Maine economy. The Lobster Institute says you take the value of the lobster landings at the dock and multiply it by 3 to 5 to get the value in the economy for the restaurant sales and the tourism it generates, all
right.
Those things.
Well, I'll tell you what, Kim, we're going to have to take off here. Can tell people what should they do with this strange crux where the BEP has just thumbed its nose at things. What's up next?
Well, we know that there's going to be some sort of BEP proceeding that they announced would take place towards the end of October. Coming up very shortly, they're supposed to put in the newspaper a solicitation of people that are interested. So we will see that fight take place over who has the standing as parties to challenge this, who has the standing to participate in those proceedings. But I think more importantly, what to do is let the Congress know, because ultimately, no matter what permits is the main side, the reality is that this project cannot move forward unless Congress approves it. That means a change in the depth and dimension of the federal navigation project in Searsport and the money to do this.
I wonder, there's sort of a senatorial courtesy thing. Do you know whether the Senate, what the senatorial delegation is on this?
Well, all I can say, if you're from away and you're visiting in Maine, write your own state's senator as well as the state loves me. I think that every member that you can contact should be contacted as it is being proposed. And again, I emphasize, not opposing bringing in to Searsport. There is a way to do that that doesn't damage the lobster fishery. We should advise or sacrifice the Maine lobster industry or the health of Penobscot Bay or the health of Penobscot baseball serving to have their wait 2 hours for a high tide.
All right.
Six or fewer times a year.
My gosh. Okay, well, look, we're going to have to get out of here. Thank you very much, and we'll keep up with this.
Thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Thanks for keeping it in the news.
All righty.
Yep, and so Kim Turner has been really one of the centers of the struggle to object and working very closely with the fishing industry, other folks, and other attorneys and other folks just like you and I that are also trying to prevent this from being done in such a way as to really harm our system.
For more about what you can do to help Maine's biggest bay, go to the Penobscot Bay blog, penobscotbay.blogspot.com.